In the 1970s, Linda Ronstadt became one of the most successful singers in the history of rock music. And then in later years, turned her attention to the light operettas of Gilbert and Sullivan, the classics with Nelson Riddle, mariachi music, and much more. She's the subject of a terrific new documentary by award-winning filmmakers Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman, who join us to talk about Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. Love the movie so much. And Rob, I understand that this goes back to your favorite record of all time being the Stone Ponies' Different Drum.
Yes, good research. The first record I ever bought was Different Drum in 1968. I was a toddler. I was a precocious toddler.
But with exquisite musical taste, clearly.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things that makes this film so powerful is the fact that it's narrated by Linda Ronstadt herself. And Jeffrey, I understand maybe we should credit the IT guy for an important connection here.
That was Rob's. Yeah, our computer repair guy was at Rob's house repairing his computer, and he saw the book on the desk, I think.
Yeah, I had the book, Linda's book, Simple Dreams, on my desk, and he said, oh, Linda Ronstadt's a client of mine. And he introduced us, and we wrote Linda a very impassioned letter, and she had seen one of our films and agreed to meet. And over lunch, we pitched her the idea of doing the film similar to how she did the book, which would be first person in her own voice, letting her tell her own story. And she was intrigued, but ultimately reluctant. She didn't think there would be any audience for the film, that there wouldn't be any funders for the film, and basically thought we were deluded to even want to do it. But we persisted, and she came around.
Obviously, you can't separate Linda's music from her family and the love she has of her family. And there's a great line early in the film when she says her father was like the music man.
Yeah, I think her grandfather maybe was like the music man. There was music in her home growing up. Everybody sang or played instruments. She heard all kinds of music, and all of those kinds of music were things that she came back to in the course of her career. When she was at the height of her pop stardom, she decided that she wanted to sing operetta. And she, learned how to do that and went to New York and starred in The Pirates of Penzance on Broadway. She was just never content to keep doing the same thing over and over again.
And then from there, she decided she was interested in standards and approached Nelson Riddle, who had worked with Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald, about doing these ballads. And that was hugely successful. And then she decided she wanted to really explore her Mexican roots, which led her to do the mariachi music.
And the Nelson Riddle albums really were a tribute to her mom, who was such a big fan.
Yeah, that music was in her house, thanks to her mom, and that was music that she also listened to throughout her pop career. She listened to Frank Sinatra and Ella Fitzgerald and all the greats, and she always wanted to sing that music, and she just decided she was going to do it. The record companies never wanted her to do these outside the box adventures in singing, because they had a sure thing and they wanted to keep it going. And she just insisted, and she had enough clout, so she was able to do it. And she was always successful. All of those adventures into all those different genres were hugely successful with audiences.
We're talking with Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman about their wonderful film, Linda Ronstadt, The Sound of My Voice. J.D. Souther is such a big part of the film. They had an interesting and a lengthy professional and personal relationship, and the love clearly never went away. It was career and other things got in the way of those two, but certainly cared about each other and continued to.
Yeah, Linda is still close to many of her exes, including Governor Jerry Brown. But she's very beloved in the music world, and it was easy for us to get people to participate because they all have such respect for her and high regard.
I have to think that love and respect that people had also helped out, because I was thinking of the work it must have been to get clearances for all the music that you used. Did it help that everybody likes her so much?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, it was a challenge because her music was all written by different people. So the publishing rights were all over the place. But yeah, I mean, she's respected and revered, but also beloved just because she's really such a wonderful person. And she's maintained great relationships with the people that she's worked with over the years.
And one of those certainly is Emmylou Harris, and I thought it was a very powerful part of the film when she talked about how much Linda meant to her trying to put her life back together after the death of Gram Parsons.
Yeah.
Yeah, her relationships with her fellow female musicians were and are very important to her, as they were to the other women. I mean, they were, you know, they were all pioneers at that point, working in a business that was primarily run by men.
And Linda was the first female rock superstar. Bonnie Raitt compares her to Beyonce in the film. You know, she really was a trailblazer.
And doing it, yeah, at a time when all the other rock stars were male and all the guys in her band were men. How difficult was that? How much of a challenge was it for her to maintain a sense of self surrounded by men on the road?
Well, I think it was very challenging for her initially when she was very young. I mean, she had huge success when she was still in her 20s and had to cope with that. It's not what she set out to do. She didn't set out to be a pop star, but that's where she found herself. But at a certain point, she really decided that she was going to take control of the narrative of her career and started making her own choices about what she wanted to do and what kind of music she wanted to do. And I think that was that really just changed everything for her.
We had Peter Asher on our show a few months ago, and he told us first about the film and how wonderful it was going to be. So we've been looking forward to seeing it. But I thought it was very interesting that he said, you know, a lot of people look at the success they had together as producer and artist and assume that I was the brains behind the operation. But as he points out, most of those big decisions were made by Linda herself.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, she's made a point of, when she was asked about the film in an interview, she said something to the extent of, you know, she didn't have anything to do with it, which could have been misinterpreted that she didn't want to have anything to do with it, which is not the case at all. But what she meant was that in her own production of her record, she was very hands-on and very involved in this. She was not that. So that's certainly how she approaches a project when it's her own project that she's going to call the shots.
Was the move away from a pop and rock stardom as simple as growing tired of playing in front of those huge crowds and arenas and stadiums?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe to some extent it was preemptive in that she was, you know, at a certain point she might age out of it, although Mick Jagger never aged out of it. But I think more she just had this adventurous spirit and had to go with where her musical instincts took her. And she had this image that she wanted to perform on a stage, which had a presidium and curtains, and she really had a connection with the audience, which she had lost when she was performing in the big rock arenas. I mean, she felt like she just really had lost any connection to the audience, that it was becoming rote. And that's what she really wanted to change, which led her to doing theater and operetta and ultimately standards and mariachi.
And as you mentioned, she never sought out the stardom, and she really does seem to be one of those rare megastars who did it for all the right reasons. Did it just because she loved making music?
She loved making music. She was not interested in celebrity. And that's really hard for, I think, for young people, particularly, to understand today, because everybody's obsessed with celebrity. And it's something that I don't really understand. I don't know why anybody would want to be famous. And I think that's one of the things I really appreciate about Linda. She just really had her core values remained intact. No matter how successful, and over the course of a career that had ups and downs, mostly ups. But she really stayed focused on the music, and that's what kept her going. Music and her personal connections to people.
Well, of course, underlying this story is the diagnosis of Parkinson's, the fact that it's taken away her singing voice, and she makes such a powerful statement in the film. She says, "I still sing in my mind." I can't imagine anybody handling the loss of that beautiful instrument with more grace than she has.
Yeah, we completely agree. But she doesn't see it that way. I mean, for her, it's just now a fact of her life, and she's made the adjustments accordingly. She's still extremely engaged in every other aspect of her life, despite her physical limitations. But I think, you know, what Jeffrey said about her basic temperament, that she's always just held on to her core humanity, and that's certainly serving her well in this latest challenge.
Well, and the final scene of the film is just, I tear up just thinking about it, a beautiful moment captured with her family. How did you get access to that, and how open was she to the camera being there?
It was very, very late in the editing process. We were literally 2 weeks away from finishing editing the film, when she invited our crew to accompany her on a trip she was making to Mexico. You know, I think at that point in the process, she was comfortable enough with us. She trusted us. And she just decided to let us in. And I think, you know, it was a way of acknowledging who she is now and what her interests are now and what her limitations are. And it was a privilege to be able to do that.
Obviously, your film is going to reach the people who grew up loving Linda Ronstadt's music, as well as a new generation of people who might not be aware. What are your goals for this Linda Ronstadt documentary that's so wonderful?
Yeah, you know, certainly we hope the film will introduce her to a new generation, an audience that may not have had the good fortune to experience her live in their lifetimes. But I think, you know, the basic human message is one of, for me, I'm inspired by her adventurous spirit and where that adventurous spirit led her in all these really incredible directions musically, and that's just a joy to experience.
Well, the film itself is a joy to experience. Wonderful concert footage of the interviews, the story. It's just a beautiful film, and I hope a whole lot of people see it. I've admired your work in the past. Celluloid Closet was terrific as well. The Sound of My Voice, Linda Ronstadt, new documentary. Rob, Jeffrey, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.